No better place to be than the house of the Lord. That's no doubt about that. We'd like tonight to turn to Mark chapter 8. This afternoon, after a good day of fellowship with Brother Randy and Sister Charity, we went back to the motel and started to think, that message is going to be awfully long. And so I thought, well, I'm going to shorten it. I lengthened it. So, Mark chapter 8, and before we get to our text, there are several connected events that occur in this chapter. Verses 1 through 9, you see that there's the record of Jesus feeding a multitude of well over 4,000 with 7 loaves and a few fishes. Verses 10 through 12, Jesus and the apostles get into a ship and they arrive at Dalmanutha. It was there that the Pharisees demanded a sign from Christ, and they did this to test him. Verse 13, Jesus gets back into the ship with the apostles, and they continue to the other side. What transpired there is recorded in verses 14 through 21. In verse 22, they arrive in Bethsaida, and Jesus heals a blind man. And that's recorded in verses 22 through 26. Verse 27, Jesus and the apostles are in Caesarea Philippi. And there Jesus begins to show them how he must go to Jerusalem and be crucified and rise again. And then he called upon them to discipleship. Again, all of these events none of them are random. They're all connected. They all have a God purpose. And we'd like to read verses 22 through verse 26. Mark chapter 8, verses 22 through verse 26. And he, Jesus, cometh to Bethsaida. They bring a blind man unto him, and they besought him to touch him. And he took the blind man. Now notice he did 5 things here in verse 23. He took the blind man by the hand. That's 1. He led him out of the town. That's 2. He spit on his eyes. That's 3. He put his hands upon him. That's 4. And then he asked him. That's 5. He asked him if he saw aught, or do you see anything? Verse 24, and he, this blind man, looked up and said, I see men as trees walking. Then in verse 25, we see 2 more things that Jesus did. After that, he put his hands again upon his eyes. So that tells us the first time that he touched this man, it was his eyes. He put his hands again upon his eyes. And then the second thing he did is he made him look up. Perhaps he tilted his head back. I don't know. And then the result was he was restored. The result of that was he saw every man clearly. Verse 26, see something else Jesus did. He sent him away to his house saying, neither go into the town, nor tell it to any in the town. So what we read here is one of the healing miracles of Christ. This one, of course, involves the restoration of sight to an unnamed blind man. Mark's the only one who records it, and it's not one of the better known miracles of healing. And Mark spoke in very simple words. He presented it very plainly, and yet it may be the most misunderstood of Christ's miracles of healing, because it's the only healing miracle of Christ where the person healed was asked if they'd been cured. The man was asked, "Do you see aught? Can you see anything?" And it was done in two stages. The only miracle that Christ performed of healing in two stages. So that makes it a very intriguing miracle. When we look at the miracles of Christ, the healing miracles, it's important that we realize they're more than events. They're not just events. They're instruments of teaching. Christ uses every one of them to teach. In all of Christ's miracles, you take whatever disease it was or infirmity or the condition that was healed, they're all pictures of salvation, but they're all pictures of spiritual need. And in every one of them, we are reminded of the sufficiency that is in Christ. No different here. Same thing. So it's of extreme importance that we do not miss the lesson of the miracle. And I think most people have missed the lesson of this particular miracle. And I think it's pretty obvious what the lesson is. It's important that we do not miss the need that is portrayed in this miracle. Because the miracles are meant to strengthen our faith in Jesus Christ. Now, the end result of the miracle, verse 25, he was restored. As a result of being restored, he saw every man clearly. So this man went from blindness to distortion. I see men, but it's like trees walking. So he went from blindness, not seeing anything, to distortion. The man had not been blind all his life because he knew what men look like and he knew what trees look like. So he obviously was not blind all of his life. So he went from blindness or darkness to distortion and from there to clarity. To clarity. When we were saved, the Lord saved our soul. He brought us out of darkness. But I believe a lot of people still have distorted views. They don't see very clearly. They need to be brought to clearness. So we want to speak on from blindness and distortions to clarity. I believe the Lord healed this man for this man's good. But I don't believe that was the main reason he healed him. I believe the main reason was as an object lesson to the apostles. He's showing the apostles their need, what they needed at that hour. And I believe that can be proven from the text. So it's of extreme importance that we do not exempt ourselves from the miracle. We must put ourselves there. We must identify with the miracle. So in order to understand why did Christ heal this man in two stages? He obviously meant to. It was his purpose to do so. So why? Why did he heal this man at this time in two stages? We have to look at the context to understand why. And as we do, we see the spiritual need that is portrayed, and we see the importance of this need being met. So let's consider first the context. By that I simply mean what happened before this miracle. What happened after? We've already said there's several connected events going on. So we need to look at those. So consider the context before we come to verse 22. What took place in verses 1 through verse 21. Because I believe it pictures the condition of the apostles, and it pictures the need of the apostles. It may picture our condition and our need. Prior to the miracle, Jesus had fed over 4,000 with 7 loaves and a few fishes. Should not that have been a very clear manifestation to the apostles of the insignificance of the temporal and that Christ is able? They should have learned that. But following that, we read that Jesus entered into a ship with the disciples and came unto Dalmanutha. While there, the Pharisees came. And what did they do? It says they came seeking a sign from heaven. What were they focused upon? They were focused upon the temporal. Well, Jesus and the disciples would leave the Pharisees. He and his disciples get back into the boat to finish their journey. And it was at this time the disciples realized that they had forgotten to bring bread and that all they had was one loaf between them. And they began to worry about this. Can you, right after this miracle, it shouldn't surprise us, we do the same thing. And they begin to worry about this. And Christ speaks to them. And he says in verse 15, take heed, beware of the Pharisees. They just came from the Pharisees. And of the leaven of Herod. So they just left the presence of the Pharisees. And now these disciples, what are they focused upon? The temporal. They're focused upon the material. Verse 16, they begin to reason among themselves. Well, we're good at that too. And they arrive at a wrong conclusion. And oh, we're good at that too. They arrive at what? They arrive at a distorted conclusion. It says the conclusion they came to is it is because we have no bread. The reason he's rebuking us is because we have no bread. And the reason they came to that conclusion was because of the word leaven. So that's where their minds immediately went. Where were their minds? Their minds were on the material. So much so that they completely missed the teaching of Christ. We miss much teaching because our minds are in the wrong things. Christ then proceeded, verses 17 through 21, to ask them 9 questions. Think about that. Jesus comes to you and asks you 9 questions. One's uncomfortable, but 9? And that's what he does. Notice verse 17. And when Jesus knew it, he saith unto them, why reason? Because ye have no bread. That's question number 1. It's a good question. You just saw what I can do. Why do you worry about having no bread? Number 2, perceive ye not, neither understand? You still don't understand? Number 3, have ye your heart yet hardened? Verse 18, having eyes, see ye not? Can't you see? Are you blind? Having ears, hear ye not? Do ye not remember? Oh, how many times the Lord can ask us that? Don't you remember? Don't you remember what I did for you? When I break the five loaves among the 5,000 that had taken place before, how many baskets full of fragments took ye up? That's another question. They say unto him, 12. And when the 7 among the 4,000, which just took place, how many baskets full of fragments took ye? And they said, 7. And he said unto them, and this was the last question, how is it that you do not understand? What he's saying is, I've been teaching, and I've been preaching to you all this time, and you still don't understand. You still don't get it. You just don't get it. You are troubled because you have only one loaf. And yet you've witnessed two miracles which prove the insignificance of loaves and fishes. And then he closes with that final question, verse 21, how is it that you do not understand? What were they lacking? Clarity. They didn't get it. They were lacking clarity. They could not make a distinction between spiritual truth and material bread. They were unable to see clear enough to make that distinction. So I believe the issue here with the disciples is clarity and distinction. After all this time with me, you still have a distorted view, is what Jesus is saying. Remember that blind man? I see, but it looks like men. It looks man has trees walking. Remember that. What he's saying is, this is you. This is you. Your view is distorted. You do not see clearly. Okay, now consider what happened afterwards. And I believe that stresses the importance of being able to see clearly. The importance of it. We've seen the need, and now we're going to see the importance. Jesus and the disciples arrive in Caesarea Philippi. No doubt, the healing of this blind man is still upon their minds. And it was here at Caesarea Philippi that Jesus brought up the issue of the need of spiritual clarity. He said in verse 27, whom do men say that I am? They give their answer in verse 28. And their answer reveals that the world only speculates about Christ. So do many of God's people. They only speculate about Christ. And you notice their answer. Some say thou art John the Baptist, some Elias, and others one of the prophets. None of those views of Christ would have any huge impact upon your life. None of them would have an impact upon how you live your life. And then Jesus said, but whom do ye say that I am? They need clear vision concerning the person of Jesus Christ. How clear is our vision concerning who Jesus is? How clearly do we see? Makes a big difference. As you read on verse 31, Jesus began to reveal to the apostles. I believe he's now showing the importance of having clear vision. So he begins to show to the apostles, the Son of Man must suffer many things and be rejected, and be killed, and rise again. He's setting forth his example. It was a declaration of his compulsion. The Son of Man must suffer. It's his obsession. It's the fixation of his heart. It's a fixation of his spirit. It's a fixation of his attitude toward the will of God. Verse 32, Peter manifests that he doesn't understand at all. That he had a wrong perception. And he lacked understanding. And he lacked clarity. In verse 33, we see what Peter did. He took Christ aside. Be it far from thee, Lord. You're above this, Lord. We see Christ's rebuke. Basically what he tells Peter, he says, you don't savor the things of God? Why is that? Why is that? Because your perception is twisted. If you see Christ clearly, you will savor the things of the Lord. And if you don't savor the things of the Lord, I mean you're hungry for it. You're just like this man who looks up and sees men as trees walking. You don't get it. You don't get it. I tell myself this all the time. Everywhere I go, you preach to people, you preach and you preach and you preach, and they sit there for decades. And they still don't get it. They just don't get it. Because their vision's blurred. They don't see clearly. The apostles had openly and outwardly confessed Christ. They were outwardly living for Christ. They were actively engaged in working for Christ. But now Christ, he says, difficult days are coming. Difficult days are coming. Difficult days are here. But even more difficult days are coming for you and I. And Christ tells these people, in light of these days, that I must suffer and I must die. Here's what you need to do. And I must, and we briefly look at these things, and we have to have clear vision if we're going to do any of them. We have to see correctly. Verse 34, he says, whosoever will come after me. The will must be engaged for Christ. If we're going to serve him, we have to want to. We have to want to. It conveys, again, whosoever will come after me. It's a determination to follow Christ. It's a resolve to follow Christ. It's a yearning. It's an eagerness to follow Christ. If we don't have that, it's because we do not see him clearly. Because if you see him clearly, you're going to think, I've got to follow him. Those words also, whosoever will come after me, shows there's an attraction to Christ. You're not going to come after him unless you're attracted to him. There are God's people who are more attracted to the world, more attracted to the temporal than they are the spiritual. Why is that? They don't see clearly. Because if you see clearly, if you see clearly the spiritual, you see clearly the temporal, and you see clearly Christ, you're attracted to it. Nothing else can happen. People don't see. They don't see. Oh, they're not as blind as they were when they were in their unsaved condition. They're still not seeing clearly. It says, men look like trees walking. Then he goes on, whosoever will come after me, let him deny himself. Let him oppose himself. He is saying, difficult days are coming and this is what you need to do. Your will needs to be actively engaged for me. You need to be attracted to me and you need to deny yourself. Oppose yourself. And if you and I have clear vision concerning ourselves, we will oppose ourselves. But many have distorted vision when it comes to who they really are. It means to refuse yourself. It means to turn down self. Turn down self. We would rather many times turn down Christ, turn down the Lord, rather than turn down ourselves. People don't see clearly. When we do that, we're not seeing things clearly. Deny self. The reason we do so is so that we can follow Him. Denying self keeps us from living a life for self. And then He tells them that they're to take up something. There's a specific order through this whole thing. You can't do step four without doing steps one, two, and three. Take up. That means to lay hold of. If I take up this hymn book, I did that on purpose. That wasn't an accident. It's something I did on purpose. Take it up. It's not something that is laid upon us. It's something that we take up. And how many times you hear people say, "Well, that's my cross to bear." That's talking about, I almost fell off there. That's talking about something laid upon us. What Jesus is talking about is not laid upon us. It's something we take up. Amen. And if I take up something, if I pick up something, I do that willingly. Amen. So we are to willingly take up His cross. What does that mean? Remember, Jesus already spoke of it. I must suffer. I must die. But the cross is an expression of the world's hatred. We must be willing to take that up. Well, I don't want anybody to dislike me. Well, you won't serve the Lord then. And you're not seen very clearly. We're to have a willingness to be hated. Do we enjoy being hated? Of course not. But we're to have a willingness to be hated, to be ridiculed, to be rejected, and thought to be the scum of the earth. That's what the cross represents. We must have a willingness to do that. It's a surrender. It's a submission to the will of God. And it's voluntarily. And then He says, "Follow me." That's a summation of the whole thing. But before you get to "follow me," there's all those other things. Follow me. Why do we need clear vision? Because we need to follow Him. And if we don't have clear vision, we won't. What's it mean to follow Him? Well, it means to live life serving Him. To live life. Life. Serving Him. It's living life separated unto Him. It means that He has the absolute preeminence. If Christ does not have the preeminence, we're not seeing things right. Well, what do you mean by preeminence? I mean He's first and never second.
First and never. First and never, never, never second. First. Well, I have a problem with that.
That's because you don't see right.
Because if you saw who Christ was, is, you don't have any problem. He's first. He's first. Never next. It means living absolutely obsessed with Him. How obsessed are we? Well, how clearly do we see? If we see Him clearly, you'll be obsessed with Him. It means to live with Him being the emphasis. He's the emphasis. Work's not the emphasis. Home's not the emphasis. School's not the emphasis. The Lord is the emphasis. That's the life that we're called to live. Well, you know, Brother Dan, we're living in difficult times. Yes, therefore we ought to be more obsessed with Jesus Christ. We need to see more clearly than we ever have. Getting our priorities in order. Peoples whose priorities are out of order is because they don't see right. The reason they put importance on things that aren't important and no importance on things that are important is because they don't see right. This is very simple. To follow Him means that we live fully, fully, fully committed to Him. We lean upon Him. We depend upon Him. We cleave to Him. We identify with Him. How are we identified? By our friends, by our family, by our co-workers. How do people identify us? We can be identified in a lot of ways. I would hope it would be as a follower of Christ. That's how we ought to want to be identified. Amen. Follow Him means to be engaged with the Lord. It means to experience Him. Experience Him. And this is consistent. This is persistent. This is not just occasional. Well, you know, I come Sunday morning. What else do you want? Life. Life. Give your whole life. Not just an hour when it's convenient, but your whole life. It's a fanatical mind for Christ. It's single-mindedness for Christ. Well, you know, Brother Dan, there are other things. Yes, I know that. But they're not as important. They're not as important. Well, I have you know, my job's important. It is, but it's not as important. My family is very important. Yes, it is. But it's not as important. That we have to keep straight. And we will if our vision's right. If we're seeing things right. It's a way of living that's in opposition to the thinking of the world. Don't be afraid to think differently than the world. You ought to be afraid if you start thinking like the world. It's a way of life that stands contrary to the perceptions of the world, the priorities of the world, the values of the world, the concerns of the world. Our concerns would be entirely different if we saw things like we ought to. Our loyalties would be different if we saw things like we ought to. Well, I've got to do this for so-and-so. They've done so much for me. Have they done as much as the Lord? You're seeing things wrong. You're not seeing things clearly. It's a life that goes beyond formality. It's a life that goes beyond appearance. I'm not going to go there. I was going to get on Facebook, but I won't. It's a life that goes beyond surface. Life goes beyond opinion. It's a steady, humble, walk that follows his footsteps through this world, and to live that life, we have to be able to see clearly. So that shows us the importance. We see the need, we need to see clearly. The importance is because of what we're called to do. In difficult times, we're to live for him. We're to live for him. That's our calling. That's our calling. To live for him. So let's look at the miracle. In this miracle, Jesus varied in his manner of healing. We have no record of him healing anyone else in this way. He heals in two stages. With that in mind, be sure of this. He did so with a set purpose. Everything he does is with a set purpose. Jesus touched this man's eyes twice. Two times. Before he saw clearly. But be sure of this. When the man said, "I see men as trees walking," that was not due to any inadequacy or failure on Christ's part. "I see men as trees walking." Some will say, "Well, that's because this case was very difficult." Come on. It had nothing. He didn't touch this man twice because his case was a particularly hard case. That's not consistent with who Jesus is. He did touch the man's eyes twice before he saw clearly. We can't deny that. But be sure of this. He didn't need two attempts to get it right. He never does. So he did this on purpose. Miracles are teaching instruments. And he's teaching the apostles, who at this time, we've already established, I believe, they lack clarity. They lack clarity. So Christ varied in his manner of healing in this particular incident raises some questions. Why? Why did Christ heal this man in two stages? Why not after the first time that Jesus laid his hands upon him that he did not see clearly? Why? Why did he ask this man, "Seest thou aught?" Why did he ask him that? It's for the apostles. He is presenting to them, I believe, a picture of themselves. It is a picture of their own desperate need of clear perception. After Jesus spit on his eyes, put his hands upon him, he asked him if he saw aught. "Do you see anything?" And the blind man replies, "I see men as trees walking." I see men, but they look like trees that are walking. Now I've got news for you. If I wake up tomorrow and I look at something and it looks like a tree walking, I'm getting an eye doctor. Something's wrong. Something's wrong. This was a picture of themselves. In their failure to understand and see clearly and distinctly the teachings of Christ. Christ has already established, you don't get it. You just don't get it. When the blind man said, I see men as trees walking, it was as if Christ held up a mirror to the apostles. And he's saying, this is you. This is where you are. This is the spiritual condition that you are in. Just like this man, they did not have enough sight to be able to distinguish between one thing and another. So it was with the disciples. Sadly, so it is with us many times. We're unable to distinguish between one thing and another. But think about that. I see men as trees walking. That's a problem. That can cause you a lot of problems in life. There's a need. I see men, they look like trees walking. That's going to result in some difficulties in your life. We bring a lot of difficulties in our life because we don't see right. This is going to cause some struggles in your life. This is going to cause some obstacles and even dangers. To continue in this state would be a life of confusion. You can't tell the difference between a man and a tree? That's confused. A lot of God's people today are mighty confused. It's because they don't see right. They don't see clearly. Bring about a lot of uncertainty. Well, that looks like a man, but looks like a tree running too. There's uncertainty. Why are God's people so uncertain so many times? They don't see right. They don't see clearly. So when he says, when this man answered, I see men as trees walking, do you see the picture of the apostles? Do you see the picture of ourselves? How often God's people are unable to make a clear distinction between the carnal and the spiritual. World of difference between the two. But many of God's people are confused. They can't seem to tell the difference. It's because they don't see right. They don't see the carnal right, and they don't see the spiritual right. And what do? They kind of bring the two together. Have trouble seeing the difference between truth and error many times. More common, perhaps, between the main thing and the minute thing. They have trouble distinguishing between the two. We're experts at making the minute the main thing. We're good at that as human beings. We're very good at it, to our detriment. How many can't distinguish between the Lord's will and self-will? Oh, an awful lot. It's because we can't see right. We have to see clearly who Jesus is. And if it is not our compulsion, our obsession, our fixation of heart to follow him, we're not seeing right. We're not seeing right. If it's not our determination to follow Christ, to live for Christ, if it's not our plan to live for Christ, we're not seeing clearly. We're just like this man. I see men, but it looks like trees walking. If we do not have a single-mindedness of purpose for the Lord, we're not seeing right. We're not seeing right. If we don't want our life molded and shaped by Jesus Christ, we're not seeing clearly. We just don't get it. Verse 22, this blind man is brought to Christ. His blindness is a picture of deficiency and need. We all have deficiencies, more than we know. Resulting from those deficiencies are many needs. They bring a blind man unto him. What should we do with our deficiencies? Bring it unto him. Bring it unto him. Why did they bring it unto him? Why did they bring this blind man unto Christ? Because they believed that he was able to fix the blindness. That's why they did what they did. We all have deficiencies. Spiritually, I'm speaking. We all have spiritual needs. Do we believe? Are we absolutely convinced that he is able to meet those needs? You say, oh, I'm absolutely certain of it. Then bring your spiritual deficiencies unto him. If you believe that, bring your spiritual deficiencies unto him. It says, they bring a blind man unto him and besought him. They're pleading with Christ. There was a desire for Christ to do something concerning this man's deficiency and need. We all have deficiencies. Everyone here would say, yes, I believe Christ can meet all of those. He can cure all of those. Then are you willing to bring it to God and beg him, deal with this. Deal with this. I have this deficiency, but I'm working on it. Well, you just keep right on and you'll just continue having it. Bring it to the one who can fix it. There was a desire. Do we desire? Do we long for Christ individually to deal directly with our deficiencies? Do we desire that? I have spiritual deficiencies. Do I desire for Christ to deal with those deficiencies? Do I desire that? Or does that make me uncomfortable? Well, if it makes me uncomfortable, I'm not seeing right. I'm not seeing clearly. And then notice what it says. They bring a blind man unto him and besought him to touch him. So they were desirous of Christ to exert his power on this man's deficiency. Are we desirous for Christ to touch our deficiency, to exert his power on our deficiency? Do we want that? Do we want that? And we have to answer that question honestly. Do we want it? Or have we learned to live with spiritual deficiencies for so long that we're just used to it? If we don't want Christ to deal directly, lay his hand, exert his power on our deficiency, don't worry about anyone else's deficiency. Well, I have deficiencies, but they have more. Don't be a scorekeeper. Bring your deficiencies to the Lord. Ask him to lay his hands upon them. So do we feel? This blind man knew he was blind. He could feel his blindness. Do we feel our deficiencies? Do we feel our deficiencies enough to bring them to Christ, desiring that he intervene concerning them What is our degree of desire? For deliverance. For deliverance. Every single one of us needs deliverance from something. Every one of us. You say, well, I don't. Well, you're not honest. Every one of us have things we need to be delivered from. Do we long for Him to exert His power upon our deficiencies? I know we don't. Many times, I'm not speaking of everyone, of course, because when these deficiencies are pointed out from the pulpit, people get mad. People get mad about that. It's pretty obvious they're not interested in the Lord dealing with them. They don't see clearly. They don't see clearly. Then notice how Jesus dealt with this man. And it's how we ought to want to be dealt with. Jesus took him by the hand, took the blind man by the hand. He took this man aside, and he dealt one-on-one with him. Do we desire that? Do we desire for the Lord to just take us individually aside, lay his hands upon our deficiency? Do we want that? Or would we rather the Lord do that to somebody else, just kind of leave us alone? Which is it? He took this man by the hand. He can't see. But when he took him by the hand, he caused this man to feel his presence. Do we want that? For the Lord to cause us to feel His presence. His presence. And it says he led him out of the town. So he feels this man, he can't see, but he feels himself being led away by Christ. Oh, how wonderful. For Christ to come where we are and lead us away. Do we desire that? If we don't, we're not seeing right. We're not seeing right. Do we want Christ to lead us away into to a special spot and deal with our spiritual deficiencies? Next it says he spit on his eyes, put his hands upon him. Put his hands upon his eyes, because that's where the problem was. He touched the point of his deficiency. Do I want the Lord to touch the point of my spiritual deficiency? Or would we rather some preacher just beat around the bush? No, we ought to want the Lord to come and touch our deficiency. Verse 24, or he asked the man if he saw anything. He's asking him a personal question regarding his deficiencies. Do we want that? Do we want the Lord to come to us individually and ask us a personal question regarding our spiritual deficiency? Asked him if he saw aught. Verse 24, we see the man's answer. Now think about this. This man could have said, he could have thought in his mind, well, before I didn't see anything. Seeing men as trees walking is better than nothing. I'll just say I'm okay. Don't we do that? Well, I'm not like I used to be. Well, that's good, but it's not good enough.
Oh, you should have saw the way I used to be. I'm better than I used to be. But do you want to be made better? Or are you content? This man could have gone home content seeing man in his trees walking. And his life would have been filled with confusion. If you see man in his trees walking, that your judgment is skewed. How many of God's people, their judgment is skewed? Because they don't see clearly. They make bad decisions. If you can't see clearly, that leads to bad decisions. That leads to bad choices, which leads to more problems. But this man didn't see. Well, he didn't say, you know what? He didn't think to himself, some sight's better than none. Yeah, I see man has trees walking, but at least I can see. And I'll just tell him, I'm fine, and I'll learn to live with it. That's where many are. I'm fine. Everything's okay with me. And then you just go on and learn to live with it. What a miserable life. What a miserable life. That's how many live. But then we see, he said he was honest. The Lord asked him if he saw anything, and he said, well, I do see, Lord, but I see men and they look like trees walking. He was honest. Be honest with God. He knows. You can lie, but he knows. Just be honest with God. Lord, I have this spiritual deficiency. And I've had it for a long time. Be honest with the Lord. And desire for God to touch the point of deficiency. And the result was, he was restored and saw every man clearly. All to see clearly. To see clearly. We get skewed in our thinking. There are people today who preach more politics than they do the Lord. Why do they do that? Well, one of the reasons is because they're not seen right. They've put more importance on really what's not that important. The important thing is the Lord. Will you come and admit? Admit, I have spiritual deficiencies. Identify those deficiencies. Lord, I have deficiencies, and this is it. This is what one of my problems. And then bring them to the Lord with the desire that he touch the point of deficiency leading to spiritual restoration. The man's sight was restored. That's an inward work. The outward result, he saw clearly. I pray tonight that we would be able to go home, just like this man did, seeing clearly. Seeing clearly, Jesus Christ. Seeing clearly, the one who came and saved your soul. We need to see that clearly. Seeing clearly, the difference between the spiritual and the temporal.
Oh, we need to see. I believe, you may disagree, but I believe that this man, that Jesus healed this man this way, he used it as a mirror to the apostles. You're not seeing clearly, and this is what you need. We're to serve God. We don't know how much time we have left, and I believe it's going to get more difficult than you even think it is. And we better serve the Lord. It's going to get difficult. It already is. I'd rather face difficulty serving God than running from Him. Because if you're not serving the Lord, you've just added to the difficulty. Oh, we need to see clearly. The Lord's the one who can restore sight. Brother Randy, if you'd come as first song.